from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can follow him on Twitter at Munsley. He joins us each and every Monday on the program. Munns, what are we listening to?
Tell me this ain't a great Monday song. It's What Do All the People Know by the Monroes.
It's a great song.
Yeah. I was going to say, it has like, I don't know if, is it the car? It has like not the Cure vibe, but the Cars vibe, maybe a little bit.
Kind of like the Cars and the Outfield.
Yeah.
New bit,
wave.
Yeah, just I don't know, just good one-hit wonder, 80s one-hit wonder stuff. And it just, I don't know. I like it a lot.
It's a great Monday vibe song, so I thank you for that. All right, I'll ask you a question that you posed yourself. Is the 2024-25 Memphis basketball non-conference schedule the strongest ever?
It feels like we are asking that question every year now for like the last 2 or 3 years, and I think there's a good reason for that. Like,
yeah, it might have to be.
I also asked that question in the story, like if and we can talk about this, you know, separately, but so maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but like last year, if last year of the last couple of years have taught us anything, it's that you don't have to, even when you are like, let's say you are in a league like the American looks like it's going to be this year. You're probably going to have to win the league anyway. Maybe no matter what you do in non-conference, you're going to have to win the league anyway. So, you know, there's two paths to net glory. And one of them is doing what Memphis is doing, and that's just loading up on, the as many beasts as you can possibly get. Or it's scheduling a bunch of cupcakes and just dominating them and letting the formula do the work for you, you know, the whole margin of victory, the whole, you know, all that stuff. Like we saw it, we've seen it the last couple of years where teams in, you know, outside the top leagues are like inexplicably ranked very highly in the net, despite having not played anybody that most people would consider are very good. And it's because they schedule these cupcakes and they beat the crap out of them. And the
metric manipulators.
Rewards, Yeah, the net rewards you for that. And it's not just teams in the, you know, in the ACC or the SEC or the Big 12 that are doing that, because, you know, like, they can afford to do that because they are going to be playing great competition in their league. But it's also teams outside those top leagues that are doing it as well. So I don't know, but the point is, Memphis has chosen again to not go that route. They have decided to go the route of the scheduling very, very stiff competition. And the reason why I say that, or the reason why I pose that question, is like, is this the best one yet? Is because, you know, twelve of the thirteen non-conference games are known. We know them. And it's like, I don't care who you schedule in that last spot. You're looking at, you know, every team that we know of right now finished top 160 in the net last year. And it would have, that number would have been even higher were it not for Missouri, who won 8 games last year and finished 158. So even Louisiana Tech, which was announced last week, I think was 93rd in the net last year. So, like, I submit, once we find, even after we find out who this 13th, even when that 13th game is announced, I submit it's going to be the best non-conference schedule that maybe they've played, at least in a very, very long time, at least in recent memory.
Yeah, I think the answer to the question of what should the strategy be, it seems to me like if your goal is just to make the tournament, it almost seems to me like you should just schedule the cupcakes and just rack and stack wins. And,
Right. But
I don't think, like, you know what I mean? Like, if your goal is, however, to be a tournament team that is capable of making a run, well, if you rack and stack cupcakes, what we've typically seen is, if you're still going to have to win the league anyway, like, you're not going to get a competitive seed. And what's the easiest way to make a deep tournament run? Get a competitive seed. Or, you know, you wind up in the situation that FAU found itself in, that Memphis could have also found itself in, which is the number one seed, you're in the 8-9 game, and the number one seed gets upset by the 16, and so now you're off to the races, and you wind up playing a diminished Tennessee injured team, and then you've got to play Kansas State for the right to go to the Final Four. Like, so it seems to me it becomes a question of, are you just trying to make the tournament, or are you trying to do something in the tournament?
I think that's totally, like, that's valid. All that's valid. And, you know, we obviously know the answer with Penny Hardaway and this Memphis basketball program. We also know Penny Hardaway, and we know that by now, we're going into year 7, he's not going to, I would be shocked if, as long as he is head coach, that they're ever going to take their schedule, as Alex Simmons, the women's coach, said, the way she phrased it a couple of weeks ago in an interview, they're never going to take their schedule under Penny Hardaway. And so, I like it. I mean, one of the most interesting things to me, besides the fact that, you know, you've got road games at Clemson and Virginia in December, you've got the you're hosting the Mississippis and also in December and later December, and then, you know, of course, you've got a home game against Missouri, you've got a game in Vegas against UNLV, a neutral site game against San Francisco, the Maui Invitational, which the only team in that field besides Memphis, I take it back, the only team currently not projected to make the NCAA tournament by Joe Lunardi is Colorado, the team that went to the Sweet 16 last year. So yeah, like it's an incredibly strong schedule. But what I was saying is, none of the 12 games that we know of so far are those extreme low majors that you see a couple of every year. with Memphis, you know, like the Central Arkansas, the North Alabama, the Tennessee Tech,
yeah,
the Alabama State, there aren't those games. So there's only one spot left. I don't think that even that last spot is going to be quite like that. I think it's got a chance to be very, very rewarding if Memphis does what it's supposed to do, but it's also pretty risky.
Jason, don't you think, you know, you've been around this program ever since I was out there with Penny, but in his DNA and from his playing days too, he remembered the games against Arkansas and how big they were, and when he became coach, he wanted to carry that on, and I think that's the reason why his schedule will always be filled with strong opponents like this one.
Phil, is that you?
Yes, sorry.
I did. Holy cow. This day just got so much better.
I surprised you.
This day got so much better. It's the best surprise in a long time. So much so that I missed the question.
Go, just, you know.
No, I'm kidding.
You got it.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I mean, I agree with what you said, that Memphis is, like, it's in its DNA. And it certainly has shown time after time after time that they want to, you know, they want to schedule the best of the best. And but what I was saying earlier, I want to go back to the point that I was making earlier. The risk reward is so, you know, like it's very much there with the schedule. Like, what if you go to Maui? And because, like, the last few years, the MTEs that Memphis has played in, like, we sit here now and we think, you know, every offseason we look at it and we go, man, that's really a nice MTE, especially if you get the right teams. Well, what if, you know, there's always that risk that some of these teams don't pan out the way you hoped? You know, was it just a couple of years ago that North Carolina was terrible? And, you know, Michigan State has had some down years in recent years. So you got to hope for those teams to be good. You got to hope for the teams like UNLV, like San Francisco, Missouri. Like last year we all thought Missouri was going to be great. Or at least, you know, you thought it was a road game against an SEC opponent. You thought, you know, those two things would help you. And they didn't really, because they only won 8 games. So, there's definitely some risk involved. But I don't know. I think this is as close as we're going to, as we've been in a very long time, to kind of like a foolproof schedule against that.
I was thinking about this. Not to relitigate last year, but this is something that's always kind of, I found myself wondering as we were watching last season unfold. There was the narrative that their non-con mark, it was kind of smoke and mirrors-y. You know, it was fraudulent. The teams that we thought were good were not really good, and so Memphis beat up on them, and then they got exposed as the season went on. I tend to think it was a good team. Yes, the schedule maybe wasn't as demanding as we thought, and that's why they were able to go 15-2 or whatever, 13-2 in the non-conference. But it was just a fragile team that just got absolutely derailed, and then once it got derailed, they couldn't get it back. How do you, when you look back on what last year was, how do you frame it in your mind?
I mean, I think I tend to lean more toward a couple of other things. One of them, they put so much emphasis, or not they, just the overall they, put so much emphasis on the non-conference schedule. Like, that's the most important part of our season. Like, that was sort of the theme, was that we've got to kick butt against these non-conference teams because we have opportunities to show people what we're made of, and we've got to make the most of these opportunities against the Clemsons, which, I mean, as we, you know, as it played out, Elite Eight team, Texas A&M. Who did they play down to the wire here in Memphis?
Houston, wasn't it? When that was like I think it was the last game of the weekend.
I mean, overtime,
I believe. Yeah, I think multiple overtimes.
Yes, I was there. I should have remembered it, but because it was one of those instant classics. It was a fantastic game. But again, Texas A&M on the road, that turned out to be a really nice win. But so, like, and I think, but what I'm, the point I'm making is I think that they got caught up in all of that. You know what I mean? Like, once they got through that gauntlet, so to speak, they kind of felt like they could take their foot off the gas a little bit. And then, of course, you know, Penny talked about it a number of times in public, that there were some locker room issues. And I think that also exposed the team more than anything else, is that, you know, you had some... I never bought into the whole, to like the quote unquote infighting. I don't think there was as much that as much as there was just politics. Like it, like, you know, like, or not even politics, but like guys who just felt a type of way and they were letting it affect their play on the floor. Like it bled out onto the floor, and you know, ultimately it snowballed. And I think that's what caught up with the Memphis team last year more than anything, was just, you know, again, like it also didn't help that they didn't play FAU until the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Like, when you have such an emphasis on the early part of the schedule, and then, like, you know, all you hear is it's going to be you guys and FAU pretty much for the whole season. Well, you look at the schedule, and FAU is not until March. Well, then you can kind of breathe easier a little bit in between, and they did that, and I think that's what ended up costing them more than anything.
Jason, do you think that this group? I know you have limited access at this point to the players, but do you get any indication that this is a more cohesive group? They seem to get along better, or is that too early to tell?
That does seem like something that is happening, yes. You know, there was a series of, or maybe a series of photos and maybe even a couple of videos that were posted on social media last week by the basketball program social media accounts. And it was like they called it a family game night at Penny's house. And, you know, all these photos of all these guys playing games and interacting and enjoying one another and just being together and the fellowship and the whole thing. And, you know, I'm not sure. I know they've done team bonding and team building things for heaven's sakes. Last summer they went to the Dominican Republic and they were riding horses and they were swimming and they were, you know, doing all sorts of things. They were going out to eat together at the resort. You know, like, all that stuff was happening. So it wasn't as if these sorts of things are never done. I think the year before that, they also had like a Navy SEALs type, team building, team bonding thing that happened. I want to say that was 2 years ago, but so these things are not completely out of the ordinary, these game night types of things. But, everybody I've talked to, the indications are that this team, the fact that they've been here together since May, since the end of May, and they've been working these last 10 weeks or whatever it's been, I think that is going to pay dividends. You know, and I mean, like, everybody talks about how these all these new players and new faces and nobody knows each other. Well, that's not quite true either. You got Musa Cisse and Tyreek Smith played together for 2 seasons at Oklahoma State. You know, Nick Jourdain is here. He's been with this coaching staff. This is going into his second season being with his coaching staff. So, yeah, I mean, there's familiarity. There's camaraderie. There's seems to be a good amount of cohesion and chemistry, probably more so than the last couple of years when you had guys who were coming in August and September. I do think there is a they're ahead of the game now when it comes to that, I think.
Well, I mean, like, to your point, I mean, it's not that they haven't done some of these things. It's that on some of those things that you just mentioned, like, I think back to the Dominican trip, we didn't know how many guys were actually going to be, like, making that trip. I mean, remember, like, at one point, we were, like, setting, like, an over-under of, like, who's actually going to be here. Like, I think they ended up surprising us having a few more than maybe we thought, but, like, it wasn't like, you know, you still didn't have the whole team there.
No, and so I think they left on a Monday. One guy got here on Friday. One guy got here on Saturday. One guy got here on Sunday. And another guy met the team
at the airport.
I think it was either the Dallas or the Houston airport. He met them there. And then, like, sort of like they held a seat for him, you know? And that's where he joined the team, was in the airport on the layover to the Dominican Republic. Like, that's how late things were going. And then, you know, you throw in Naquan Tomlin coming in December. And then 2 years ago, you had DeMarre Franklin, who you didn't know what he was going to do. Oh, yeah, last year, you can't fail to mention that David Jones didn't get here until, like, the first or second week of September. Malcolm Dandridge, you know, he was in the transfer portal until the absolute very last second. So, yeah, the fact that they've had 10 scholarship guys here since the end of May, none of them have left. The only ones who came in later were PJ Carter, the UTSA/Rice transfer. I think that's it when you're talking about scholarship players. So they're just does that mean the difference between several wins and losses? We'll see, but it certainly can't hurt.
If I break the season up into three components, non-conference play, conference play, conference tournament, what's the most, in your mind, like, what is the most indicative of how the season went?
Last season or this upcoming season?
I'm saying this upcoming season.
Well,
you see where I'm going with this?
I think so. I hope so, anyway. I feel like, what, conference tournament? Because
it's this weird reality of, okay, we saw this year, like, yeah, the non-conference play, like, it was fun. Like, if you think back to the highlights of the season, like, that Clemson game was awesome. Like, that was an awesome environment. That was a great basketball game. Like, that was just a fun, fun day. But, like, now you get to this point where it's like, okay, even if they run through conference play and they just have kind of a mediocre non-conference play and then they get knocked out of the tournament, like, I still think that they could wind up being on the outside looking in. It's like, I think that is the jeopardy of what the league has become is if it's this one-bid league, I mean, it just, to me, it's almost going to be like, are we just really just playing for the conference tournament now?
Yeah, and you hate to look at it like that.
No, it's not fun. I mean, if we talk about the whole schedule thing, you know another reason to schedule good or big time? It's a business. Give your fans the games they want to go to.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, is there a world where they just, you know, they pick up a couple of wins in the non-conference that they might have been, you know, not favored in? Do they go to Maui and shock, you know, pull off a shocking upset against, say, oh, I don't know, a UConn. I mean, the schedule's not out yet.
But
one of the, yeah, like UConn, North Carolina, Iowa State's picked to be very good this year. Auburn is another one. So, yeah, like, do they do that? And then do they handle their business the way they're supposed to in AAC play? Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. But I get your point that, you know, not the easiest path, but maybe the easiest path to assuring yourself of getting into the NCAA tournament is how things go in Fort Worth in March. And so, yeah, that's another valid point that you make. I'd certainly see what you're saying there, and there's definitely an argument to be made that. Unfortunately, that matters more than say the other two thirds of the season that you mentioned.
I mean, I know it's an extreme example, but there's a reason why the West Coast Conference rigs their conference tournament like they do. I mean, you know what I mean? Right. Like, Zach, the 1 and 2 teams have to win twice. And right. You don't, the tournament's basically been going on for like a full week before they even show up. Like, it's
right.
Like, and that's like, to me, like, that's going to be a huge part of if the league's new reality is you're really only guaranteed one bid. Well, I want to make sure that the team that's getting the one bid is the right team. You know what I mean? Or as close as I can to doing it.
Well, let's hope this for Memphis's sake and for the Memphis fan base's sake that everything goes well in the non-conference, everything goes well in the conference, and then by the time they get to Fort Worth, they're just playing for seeding. Or that would be the only thing that changes. Like,
yeah.
You know, let's hope for everybody's sake that by the time Fort Worth rolls around, that the vast majority of the suspense has been removed from you know the road ahead.
The more I think about last season, like, yeah, I know we as sports fans, like, we can fall into convenient narratives and being like, this team fell apart, or, you know, however we're going to say it. I really think one of the more, like, if you were going and looking at it, like, historically, and you were trying to, like, really figure out, like, what happened, I think an underrated moment of last year is the USF game on an ice storm night, or what did we have? It was like a snowpocalypse or whatever, and... Yeah. You wind up on a weird night against a team that was better than they were given credit. You'd kind of gotten punched in the mouth a little bit, but it was kind of the, all right, let's get back on our feet. And you think, like, what's the best way to do that? Home game, you know, we get our crowd back, we'll be in, and then you wind up at a game with like 11 people. And then you jump out early, and then you are just holding on for dear life.
Throw this in the mix, too. That was, I think, two games after Caleb Mills' injury.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Happened, and it was one game after, if I'm not mistaken, they went and put up like 180 at Wichita State or whatever it was, where they could not miss, you know, and they're you know, feeling like they can do no wrong. And I mean, I don't know. Nobody ever said that. Nobody ever said, like, man, we were on top of the world. We were on cloud nine. We felt invincible. But, you know, these are the little things that you know, that play into the course of an entire season. It's like, you know, those two things happened in the two games before the South Florida game. And then, yes, there was ice all over the roads. And it was freezing outside, and the school actually, like, went out on social media publicly and was like, please don't come to the games. If, you know, like, if you want to come, come on. But
it's dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, don't get yourself hurt doing it, or get yourself stranded or whatever. And, you know, that I'm sure, you know, had an effect on the attendance. And yeah, no, it felt like it was... I mean, I think there were bigger crowds at some of those COVID games.
Jason, got another. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it was like, yeah. That is, to Jeffrey's point, that game is really kind of where it all, you know, where it all caught up to him and fell apart.
Okay, Jason, got a question about the roster. Tell me this: of that group that's here, I guess mostly the 8 D1 transfers. Tell me, who needs to become the pommel horse guy? Who's going to be the breakout guy on this roster?
Well, so we know who P.J. Haggerty is. We know who Tyrese Hunter is. So you would say, if I'm understanding what you're saying, yeah. Like, they can't be – they're disqualified from consideration. Memphis knows who Nick Jourdain is, so we disqualify him too. I guess I would say, you know, Dane Danger is a candidate because he gives Memphis, you know, kind of something that it hasn't had in a couple of years, like a true big man who is an offensive, who is a threat on the offensive end, who can play more than 15 minutes a game. And, you know, the fact that he had he's had, you know, he had like one pretty good year at Illinois, and then last year it wasn't so good. And so from that standpoint, like, you really kind of don't, you're kind of like, there's some trepidation with what you're going to get out of him. So I would say he's a candidate. And then Tyreek Smith is one, you know, a guy played part of his career at Oklahoma State and, you know, wasn't like a star or anything. And then he goes to SMU last year and becomes this, like, I don't know. I don't know if he made the all defensive team, but I feel like he should have if he didn't. You know, a guy who's just this, like, not singularly focused, because he's not just like a ghost on offense, but like he's programmed for defense. And, you know, Memphis hasn't had, or at least they didn't last year. They didn't really have many guys who were programmed to be.
I mean, I had any
except for Bills, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that would be a nice, you know, shot in the arm for this team to have somebody like that you can count on to be a rim protector and be a strong rebounder. And I mean, to me, like the most encouraging thing about this roster is that there's going to like everybody, there are very clearly defined roles, and maybe this is because there aren't very many. You know, the full roster there aren't 13 scholarship guys, at least not yet. That there does seem to be a bit of a pecking order. You know, like, you've got Tyrese Hunter and P.J. Haggerty at the top. Colby Rogers is going to be your sharpshooter. You know, Tyreek Smith as my pick to be the starting four, and then Dane Dane is going to be your five, with Musa coming off the bench and Nick Jourdain coming off the bench and Barack Okoje coming off the bench. But I would say, yeah, I would say it's either going to be Tyreek Smith or Dane Danger. Those are my two picks, with maybe in a close third, depending on his health, Barack Okoje. I think he's got like X factor potential to me. If he fully recovers, which everybody expects he will, and he's completely available for all, if not the majority of the season, I think he's got a chance to be, you know, a really, really, really strong cog in the wheel for Memphis this season. So those are my thoughts on that. And yeah, those are my three picks.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.